AFF Jeffersonville, listen local.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. We've got a lot of news to get to tonight. Coming up, we'll talk about the Sullivan County Parks and Recreation Department survey looking for residents to offer comments on the park system in Sullivan County. That's coming up in the latter half of the program. But first, it's time for our ongoing election coverage here on Radio Catskill. On Monday afternoon, we are checking in with Carter Walker of Vote Beat, Pennsylvania. Because he's on top of the story about the ballots, the mail ballots in Pennsylvania, and whether or not they have to be dated. Recent developments since then. Carter, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I understand that the ACLU has asked now I thought they were going to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. It looks like they've gone right to the U.S. Supreme Court. But do you want to remind folks what this is all about before we get into it?
Yeah, you know, like I was telling you, it's even difficult for me to keep track of it sometimes. So, as you know, Pennsylvania law right now, it requires that voters sign and date their mail ballot return envelope in order for their ballot to be counted. And that dating part has been disputed for years in and out of the courts. Courts have said it's not necessary based on federal law. Courts have said it is necessary. It's been challenged under the state constitution. And so where we're at with it right now is that there was a case brought by the ACLU after the primary challenging the dating requirement. They were successful in eliminating it in the state's Commonwealth Court, but the Supreme Court struck that down. And then just this past week now, the ACLU has asked the state Supreme Court if they would retake the issue and skip the lower court process that most court cases normally go through a special power that the Supreme Court has called King's Bench Authority. And that might be a little bit contradictory because I just said that the Supreme Court had knocked down the case, but they shot it down on procedural grounds, saying that the lower court didn't have the authority to take up the issue. So now the ACLU is saying, well, hey, you have this authority to take up the issue. So we'd like it if you do so.
And in fact, that idea was brought up by one of the members of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court when they made that ruling. I think that was on the 20th or so. Is that correct? That they even suggested that themselves, or at least one of the members did.
That's right. The ruling that dismissed the case on jurisdictional grounds, that was a 4-3 ruling. And the three dissenting judges, they wrote in their dissent, they disagreed with shooting it down on jurisdictional grounds, but they also said if we're going to do that, we should take it up on our King's Bench authority because this is an important issue. So the Supreme Court hasn't yet said whether it's going to take the case using that authority, but you know, the fact that three out of the seven judges have already said that they think they should use that authority to take the case, that's a pretty good sign that they would.
And the ACLU has now officially asked them to use this King's Bench power?
That's right. Yeah, they have. And I think you referenced another Supreme Court case in your intro that they had to talk about.
Yeah. So the ACLU, is this the same ACLU that brought this original case about the ballots in Pennsylvania? Are they the same ones now going to the U.S. Supreme Court?
It is, yeah. And you might remember, and your listeners might remember, several months ago at this point, when we were talking about mail ballot dating lawsuits, we were primarily talking about challenges in the federal court under the 1964 Civil Rights Act. That was the case that had been going on since 2022. And just before the primary here in March, the primary is in April, but in March, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals struck down a decision from a lower court that said that the ballots didn't need to be dated on their return envelope. That one kind of languished at that Third Circuit level for several months because the ACLU had a long time in which they could appeal it up to the U.S. Supreme Court if they wanted. And it seems like the strategy is they didn't want to appeal it up to the U.S. Supreme Court while they had the state Supreme Court challenge in the works that could maybe work. But their deadline to appeal was this past Friday, and they did appeal up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And, you know, that court, we don't know if it's going to take it as well, but just another sign that, this issue is not one that's going to be going away.
Yeah, and it's also not one that necessarily will be resolved before Election Day because, I mean, you're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court. That's a different time frame there.
Definitely. If the U.S. Supreme Court takes it up, that one is a much longer shot than the state Supreme Court challenge in the first place, but also either way it would shake out, not going to happen before the election. The state Supreme Court challenge, now that might happen before the election because when they take these cases under their King's Bench authority, you know, kind of the whole pretext to that is, hey, this is something that is very important that needs to be resolved quickly so we can't go through the normal court process. So if they were to take it up, that one we probably would see a decision before November. And, you know, just to reiterate why all this back and forth between the courts and the parties is important, you know, this really does affect a lot of voters here in Pennsylvania. According to my look at the state's data from this primary, there were about 8,500 ballots rejected in Pennsylvania for errors that voters make, like forgetting a signature or a date or not putting their ballot in a secrecy envelope. And of those 8,500, about 4,400 of them were for these dating issues. So it can impact a large number of ballots, and that's going to be exponentially higher now in the general election when we have a lot more people voting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and just staying with that, staying with the mail ballot issue, but there are multiple cases now just about Pennsylvania's mail ballot. Staying with the dating case at the state level, is there any indication? You say it may happen before Election Day. Is there any indication, any way of you knowing anything about when they might take it up? What are the signs that would indicate that the state Supreme Court will use that King's Bench power?
Yeah, well, basically the answer is you just got to stay glued to the court's docket, which I'm looking at right now. When they decide that they're taking it, they will issue some kind of order about briefing schedules or whatnot. They haven't done that yet. It wasn't under a King's Bench authority, but it was a different case related to mail ballots that somebody was asking the Supreme Court to take through the normal case taking process. That took a couple weeks for them to issue an order saying, okay, yeah, we'll take it. So there really is no way to tell. I expect once they do take it, though, if and when they do take it, it would move quickly.
Okay, now moving back, or I should say moving up to the American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania, the case that they're taking to the U.S. Supreme Court to decide whether about this dating ballot return, whether that violates federal law. You mentioned that the group filed its petition on Friday on behalf of the Pennsylvania branch of the NAACP, and you quote Jeanette Wallace, general counsel of the NAACP, and I just want to share his quote with listeners saying, quote, "The right to vote is one of the most important in this country. Ballots should not be rejected because of irrelevant errors. We will continue to fight so that the voters' voices may be heard." And that's a quote, again, from Jeanette Wallace, general counsel of the NAACP. I'm wondering, can you tell me any more about the viewpoints of those that are working on this, that it's the ACLU that is actually asking the Supreme Court to do things, whether they're doing it on behalf of the NAACP? Are there any other parties involved, any other folks weighing in like that?
Yeah, I mean, the case that in the state case, there's a coalition of voting rights groups. Let me just read you some of the names here. There's the New Pennsylvania Project Education Fund, which you can think of as similar to the New Georgia Project. The NAACP is part of that case as well. Common Cause, which has branches all over the country. The Black Political Empowerment Project. So there are a lot of organizations that have been pushing against this data requirement for years. And I should say not just the organizations themselves, but also election administrators. They don't typically argue for political purposes. In fact, they don't do that ever. But they have for years been saying the state isn't really – it's not a value to us for how we do our jobs. It doesn't make a difference to how we administer the election because we already know when we sent out the ballots and when we received them back. And that's kind of what Mr. Wallace is getting at here in his quote, is that this requirement, they see it as superfluous and just an unnecessary burden for their voters.
Is it really just a matter of how the initial law was written, that was just written in the law, and so now that's the way it needs to be?
Yes, basically that's what happened. My understanding has been that, you know, when I wasn't covering elections at the time that Act 77, which is this law, came into place, but my understanding in the years since has really been that they just took the language from our absentee ballot voting statute, which was, it still exists, but it was an older provision where people, if they're not going to be in their polling place on election day or they're sick, they could use that as an excuse and vote by mail that way. They just took the language from that law and copied and pasted it over to the mail voting law. But the absentee ballot voting statutes, they were written at a time before we had these electronic systems that could timestamp and track when the ballots were sent out and received back. So that information was necessary. It was necessary for voters to write it on the return envelope so that they knew it had been received in time for the election, because it has to be received by the end of voting on election day, 8 p.m. But now we have electronic systems that are tracking all that.
How are you feeling about the strength of this, I don't know if you call it a case or petition, to the U.S. Supreme Court, especially since, as you mentioned, that the third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals already ruled in March that the requirement did not violate a federal provision. So what's the likelihood that case has some legs?
Yeah. Well, I think it's always a little bit of a fool's errand to try and predict what any court will do, especially the Supreme Court. They've had some surprises on voting rights cases in the last couple of years. People were expecting them to rule one way, but then they ruled another. But I'll say the Third Circuit Court of Appeals opinion, if I'm remembering correctly, it was a three-judge panel, and two of them were Democratic appointees. And this issue had partially come to the U.S. Supreme Court before, this dating issue, just in a real minor way. And Judge Clarence Thomas had, in the writing that he had that basically said this case is no longer an issue, he seemed to display some skepticism towards this argument that the ACLU is trying to put forward before the court now. So those two things wouldn't really bode well for them if the court does take up this case.
Okay, I hate to ask because we've got mired here in just the beginning of the show talking just about two different Supreme Courts dealing with a very similar case, but I'm going to ask you. Or what other cases are you watching that might impact the election right now? And have there been any developments since the last time we talked?
Yeah, lots of cases. Not as many developments this past week. I guess you know, two appeals to the Supreme Court is not enough for one week, but the other ones have been a little bit more stagnant. You know, there's a case we've talked about out of Western PA about whether if a county is going to reject a voter's ballots for one of those three reasons I mentioned, if they have to notify the voter, that is also has been appealed up to the Supreme Court, waiting to hear if they're going to take it. There's another case from Western PA on if a voter's ballot gets rejected, can they go cast a provisional ballot and have that counted? Supreme Court has accepted that case and just waiting on the decision there. And then, of course, there's another big one, which is a Republican case using the same legal argument as the mail ballot dating case. It's asking the Supreme Court to use its King's Bench authority to determine whether or not counties should be able to allow voters to fix those errors on their mail ballot. Like, a voter doesn't put on a date, can a county call up that voter, say, hey, you didn't put on a date, you need to come down to the office and put a date on your envelope, or we're going to reject your ballot. The Republicans, RNC and PA GOP, are arguing, you know, that's illegal under Pennsylvania law, and Supreme Court, we'd like you to stop that practice around the state. Supreme Court hasn't ruled yet if they're going to take that case. But if they do, that's another one that could have a big impact.
Do any of these things that you're watching, I mean, we're looking at this, I think we're talking about this in terms of how it might impact the voters, because, you know, that's the general public. That's who, you know, we're talking about. Of course, there's the people that run the elections are affected by this. Does any of this have the potential to affect how the votes are counted on election night or immediately afterwards? Because I know that Pennsylvania boards of elections already have their work cut out for them doing all their counting on election night. Is any of this potentially impacting this beyond whether or not they know which votes get counted or not?
Well, I think as of right now, it's an unknown. Election administrators don't really know what they'll be doing. Are they going to count these ballots? Can they call their voters if they have a mistake to be made? But I'll say, you know, the Department of State and the counties have really been pushing courts in the past couple of years to kind of get more on board with the election calendar. You know, there's been a number of times where courts have released decisions in the midst of an election. And, you know, some of that they can't help. But there have been other times when, you know, the decision probably could have waited a week or so to align better with the election calendar, so it wouldn't seem like it was changing the rules right in the middle of things. And so the Department of State and counties have really been pushing the courts to avoid issuing those kinds of decisions. And that's why we've been seeing these Supreme Court cases move so quickly, because the court instituted some new rules that would tighten up these deadlines to try and move this stuff along quicker. So it seems like to me the court has gotten the message that, hey, we don't want to be appearing to or actually changing the rules in the middle of an election, especially not a presidential election. So I'm hoping we're not going to see any of the stuff that we saw maybe in 2022 that would have changed the rules a bit for how these ballots got counted. But again, we're just going to have to wait and see how these cases play out and if there's any other cases that get brought up between now and then.
And I mean, again, this is a large state. There's a lot of people that are affected by these things. And then on top of that, you have the added pressure, the fact that it's a swing state. And, you know, the whole country is kind of watching what happens in Pennsylvania very closely. I mean, you're reporting on it. At a state level, but like the whole country's watching this. I mean, writing for a national audience this weekend, the New York Times put out an article called Five Court Cases to Watch Ahead of Election Day. And, you know, this ballot dating case is right there front and center. What do you think about that in terms of it, of the story and what it means for this moment that, you know, the country is kind of watching this?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the right take on it from the Times. That it seems like this election is coming down to Pennsylvania, right? And Pennsylvania in 2016 swung about, what, 44,000 votes for Trump, 88 in 2020 for Biden. That's you know, a space of like 100, 130,000 ballots. And since those races, some reporter we did 2 weeks ago, the state has gotten much closer in terms of how many Republicans and how many Democrats there are registered with each party. So there's even less wiggle room that we've had before. And before it was really tight, and polling is showing it's really tight. And so even though these, you know, I don't want to say a couple of thousand voters as if, you know, one person who's eligible to vote, not being able to vote isn't a problem. Of course, we want everybody who's eligible to vote to vote, but that's why we're seeing such a focus on these issues that might only affect a couple of thousand voters. Because, you know, a couple thousand here, a couple thousand there, that could add up and have an impact on the results.
All right. Well, Carter, I want to thank you for going over all of this. Is there anything that you didn't get to that you want folks to know before we go?
I would just say again, a reminder that Pennsylvania does not have the ability to start processing its mail ballots before Election Day, and that is likely going to cause a delay in our results. So we won't know how the state votes. In all likelihood, we won't know on election night.
It's a good thing to keep in mind, and I think it's something that that you'll end up saying on air here a couple more times before the election, and we're going to be talking to folks about that too, especially at our local PA boards of elections. They always point that out as well, that they can't start counting those mail ballots until election night, until the polls close. Carter Walker, your work is up at votebeat.org. People got to check it out for voting information across the country and the news that's impacting this election. Votebeat.org. And Carter, we're going to be checking in with you, I think, regularly until we get to election day, possibly after.
Happy to do it.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll check in with Sullivan County and get an update from the Parks and Rec, and they want an update from you as well. We'll find out all about it. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Support comes from Catskill Brewery, brewing ales, lagers, and mixed fermentation beers in a LEED Gold certified building in Livingston Manor. Beer garden and food truck at exit 96 off Route 17. CatskillBrewery.com. From the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new releases, film festivals, nostalgic screenings, live music events, and more. Information and schedule at CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This is Radio Catskill, keeping Pennsylvania voters connected this election season. October 21st is the last day to register before the November general election in Pennsylvania. October 29th is the last day to apply for a mail-in or civilian absentee ballot, and the Pennsylvania County Board of Elections must receive mail-in absentee ballots by 8 p.m. on Election Day. November 5th is Election Day. Pennsylvania polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Radio Catskill, keeping you connected this election season.
It's extremely important to know who's going to take over in just a few weeks. And the difference between these two candidates in their outlook, in their vision, in their approach to the world could hardly be bigger.
I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
And that's coming up in just 8 minutes right here on Radio Catskill. But before that, we've got more Local Edition. Welcome back to the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. And last weekend marked the official start of fall. And you may have noticed the leaves turning even before then. But it's still warm enough to take a walk in the park without a jacket. And the Sullivan County Parks and Recreation Department recently rolled out a survey for residents to offer any comments on the current park system. And this effort's part of an initiative to expand and improve on the county parks and their recreation areas. Radio Catskill's Nia Watson met with Assistant Recreation Director Fiona Feltman to learn more.
The Sullivan County Parks Survey is open and will be closing on October 14th. The questions range from asking how often users frequent each park to which amenities users prefer. Results from the survey will be used towards the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. I'm here with Fiona Feltman from the Department of Parks, Recreation, and Beautification to learn more. Fiona, can you tell me a bit more about the master plan?
We're excited to have this master plan in place to assess what we have in terms of parks and recreation in our county, see where things might be lacking, see what might be lacking, and see what we can do to improve the future of what we have.
And can you share a bit about what the initial priorities will be for this project, whether it be adding more fitness stations or playgrounds?
A priority for this project will be the biggest one, seeing where we're lacking facilities of parks and recreation in the first place and seeing what can be done about that. We're also seeing what we can expand and upgrade at the facilities we do have, such as having more boats to be rented at Lake Superior and adding more trails at a variety of our parks, and even just adding more parks, such as the Calicoon Park is a new one that we are in the works of doing.
Yes, so something for people to look forward to. So the survey, it lists parks and centers currently managed by the county, and I'm curious about the phases of the master plan. Will the department start the process with a specific park? Is there a determined order just yet?
We don't have a determined order just yet. We're looking forward to the feedback we get from the community and are going to be able to go from there.
Yes, so in the meantime, residents will be able to add their input via the survey. So the survey also asks what residents and visitors think about the current ADA accessibility and public transportation available. Can you tell me a bit about how the department plans to improve on these factors?
Right now, all of our facilities are ADA compliant. When it comes to transportation, being in such a rural area, a lot of people get places by car or by getting someone else to drive them. So we're really looking forward to the feedback we get from the community members on how they get to our facilities to find out if a reason that people aren't coming to our facilities as much is because of a lack of transportation issue. We'll see what we could do about that for the future, you know, looking at the Move Sullivan buses or seeing what else might be available.
So the survey is set to close in mid-October, October 14th. Where can folks find the survey to fill out? And once it closes, what are the next steps after that?
To find the survey, people can go to our department's website at sullivanny.us/department/parks and recreation. We have it right there on our homepage. The survey is being done through SurveyMonkey, and it takes about 5 to 10 minutes to complete. And your input is really crucial for helping us figure out where you like going, what you like doing, and what you would like to have in the future.
All right. And Fiona, is there anything else about the survey that people should know?
Another reason that we're really excited to have the survey is because it does talk about all of the parks and facilities that we own or operate. So maybe when you're going through them, it'll give you a chance to learn about another park or facility that you didn't know that we have. And now you know about it and you'll get to go visit it.
Okay. Thank you for sharing this information on the future development plan and letting us know how folks can get involved. From the Department of Parks, Recreation, and Beautification, thank you, Fiona Feltman, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
In Liberty, I'm Nia Watson for Radio Catskill.
Well, thank you, Nia, for that report. Thank you for listening. This has been the Local Edition. That's going to be it for our program tonight. Remember, if you've missed any part of this program, don't miss any Local Edition. Get the Local Edition podcast. Sign up wherever you get your podcast from. And if you've missed any of our election coverage, our candidate interviews, and other reporting that we're doing on the election, check out our election page. It's at WJFFradio.org. That's WJFFradio.org. Coming up on the Local Edition this week, we return to candidate interviews. We'll be looking at New York's 51st Senate District and talking to candidates running in that. And that'll be coming up later this week, but not tomorrow, because here's what we've got happening tomorrow.
I'm Bill Williams. Join me for the Kingfisher Project on Tuesday when my guest, Jessica Hoppe, will discuss her brand new memoir, First in the Family, the story of survival, recovery, and the American dream.
When I entered recovery, it was shocking in a way that made me feel a little ashamed that I was somehow, you know, not privy to information that I should have been, that I should have known more. I felt kind of dumb.
That's the Kingfisher Project, Tuesday night at 6, here on Radio Catskill.
So Bill Williams and the Kingfisher Project on deck for tomorrow on the Local Edition. I'll be back then to set that up for you. And coming up tonight at 7, we've got Laura Flanders and friends at 7:30. It's Trailer Talk, kicking off a great night of news and informational content. Before all of that, we've got The Daily. So stay with us for that coming right up. Tonight, it'll be overcast, overnight low down to 52. Areas of patchy fog on the early end tomorrow. And then it'll be cloudy after that with a high of 64. And mostly cloudy again tomorrow night. Slight chance of a rain shower. Overnight low down to 51. That's it for the Local Edition tonight. Thank you so much for listening. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank. still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.